Nope, not going to do it. Not going to make the same mistake 2 days in a row. There is no way I'm saying the dust is settling after the reports and after the Tyson fire this morning like I did yesterday morning. All that did yesterday morning was kick up another dust storm.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we've got a Farmer Forum fired up for you with panelists Sherwin Newland, Brent Judish, and Brad Nelson. And later, Crop Tour veteran Jay Merriman. And right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from AgPro Magazine will give us an update. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
Hey, thanks, Davis. Yeah, you know what? Sometimes it's a little difficult to see the sparkle of Sparkle City through all the dust that's in the air.
There's a little dust in the air. But look here, we got corn at zero right now, Sep.
Yeah.
The D's, well, the March is off a half cent. We don't need to talk about that. But we're unchanged in the front, too.
Yeah. Yeah, not bad. Jeez. Not bad. It is a stemming of the tide of selling that we saw in the corn market following
now,
that.
Now, you're just changing your words now. Just a different way of saying the dust is settling, isn't it? It's a stemming of
Stop
the tide.
Stop it. Don't tie me into something like that.
I'm sorry. I was thinking out loud.
Actually, it's a terrible sign that corn is steady. Actually, corn should be trading sharply higher.
Attaboy. Now we're getting somewhere.
Did you see that tweet yesterday? I can't remember who it was from. I think it was from Kimbrell.
His wife
was listening to the show and said it cracked her up how she thinks, or how we think we're funny.
Well, I can assure you, Mrs. Kimbrell, we are hilarious. There's
long
no
as
doubt
we're
about
having
it.
Fun. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, yeah. And then the cattle market. We've got some strength coming back into the cattle market. The August contract still under a little bit of pressure, but it's only a nickel lower right now, Davis. That August contract is one that I think we still need to watch very, very closely. And feeder cattle. Feeder cattle are getting back a lot of what they lost yesterday. Got some strength going on in the hogs. And by the time you get all the way down to the wheat on my quote screen, we've also got some plus signs there. Some green,
not too shabby
some green
there.
Numbers. Yep.
Let me call
yep.
out that August feeder cattle contract. Up $6.25 this morning.
Yeah.
$133.97.5. That's nice.
That's a bit of went too far too fast to the downside. Recovery
been there,
going there.
Been there, done that.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. All right, what's in the news?
Chip, after announcing a new round of tariffs on $300 billion worth of Chinese trade goods, President Trump did back away from the stance, delaying the imposition of those tariffs on roughly half the goods on the list. Of the delayed tariffs, President Trump said, quote, "We're doing this for the Christmas season, just in case some of the tariffs would have an impact on U.S. customers." Meanwhile, the U.S. Trade Rep's office said it plans to drop tariffs altogether on 25 types of products, including, quote, they're saying it's based on health, safety, national security, and other factors. Items on that list include car seats, shipping containers, cranes, certain fish, and Bibles, along with other religious literature. Yeah. Watchers are hopeful that... Go ahead.
Just the simple fact that he finally said, just in case it would have an impact on consumers here. Mm-hmm. At least that's somewhat of an acknowledgement that the tariffs are paid by consumers.
Right, right.
You know, it's not like all this money, billions and billions and billions of dollars rolling in from China.
Is there a button for that? No, that's not the right button for that.
No,
No.
It's not like it's being paid by China. It's being paid by the consumers of those goods that come in from China.
Mm-hmm. Well, watchers are hopeful that Trump backing away from at least some of the threatened tariffs will lead China to make good on their promises to purchase U.S. ag goods as a sign of good faith. On that note, Trump tweeted yesterday, quote, "As usual, China said they're going to be buying big from our great American farmers. So far, they have not done what they said. Maybe this time it will be different." Now, some suspect the Trump administration will have to ease restrictions on Chinese telecom company Huawei before those purchases will be made and any meaningful progress can be forged in negotiations. Tit for tat going on there with Huawei and the ag product purchases?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it, but he needs to not say anything about ag product purchases anymore.
He just needs to not say
anything. He just needs to not say it. This is tiresome.
This as Brazil's national supply company Conab says it expects that country's grain production to increase 6% over last year as Brazil becomes the world's largest soybean exporter. The agency also said Brazil's Safrinha corn crop production was a record 73.1 million tons, up 35.6%. A chip on the soybean side, Brazil currently accounts for 56% of world soybean exports, that according to the World Trade Organization. Is that demand lost forever?
No. No, because China will still be a value buyer in the market.
Right.
It's not if,
good point.
If
good point.
U.S. soybeans are available cheaper, it's not like they'll snub their nose at U.S. soybeans.
Okay. Well, real quickly, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa says he would like to utilize SEC filings to investigate and demonstrate the degree to which major oil companies are benefiting from small refinery waivers to the RFS. At this point, confidentiality clauses prevent the EPA from disclosing specific information on small refinery waivers. Grassley told reporters yesterday, quote, "We can't let oil companies hide behind proprietary information. If they're getting help from the government needs to know the basis for their help, and the public needs to know." Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of Ag Professional. How are you, Margie?
Doing well, Chip.
Good, good, good. Late development of this crop. We've still got a lot of planes flying around out there, and there's still a lot of planes out there that are applying chemical.
Yep, you see a lot of aerial applicators. And I tell you what, Chip, you know, we report a lot about consolidation and acquisitions and ag retail. You know, I've already reported two such in August with Greenpoint Ag and Brandt picking up additional locations. But here this morning, I wanted to discuss aerial application because the industry's grown. The National Agricultural Aviation Association conducts its census, if you will, of the industry every 6 to 8 years. And they found from 2012 to 2019, there's been an increase in aerial application businesses, as well as the number of ag pilots.
Well, and it's with the spot spraying that takes place and the prescription application of some of the chemicals out there, you can do a lot of that aerially, and guys are taking advantage of that.
Absolutely. So there's 127 million acres of cropland treated by aerial aviation every year, which is pretty impressive. Also, you know, this is going to be a data point to watch, I think. 4% of the respondents to this survey use unmanned aircraft systems or drones.
Really?
So something to watch, especially as you talk about that pinpoint and prescription application.
Yeah. You know, that's got me really intrigued. The drone application, especially when we're talking about insecticide.
Because
you can get so pinpoint precise with where you're putting that insecticide in place out there. Good stuff, Margie. Thanks.
Thank you, Chip. Have a great day.
You too. You too. That is Margie Eckelkamp, the editor of Ag Professional. All right. When we come back, we're going to get this farmer forum started. And it's got a bit of a twist, and I bet you know what it is. All these guys are coming along on the 2019 Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. We've got Brad Nelson from Minnesota, Brent Judish from Iowa, and Sherman Newland from Illinois. Coming up next, right here on AgriTalk.
Quantix is a powerfully simple drone that helps you scout all of your acreage from the sky. With a swipe of a button, its automated flight covers 400 acres in 45 minutes, delivering real-time, quick-look maps, which can be viewed immediately after landing. For deeper analysis, AVDSS Analytics transforms the data into actionable insights. It doesn't get any easier than Quantix and AVDSS. Visit farmdronedemo.com to learn more.
The simple life of a farmer. All you need is land, family, sunshine, and rain. And a drone for digital imaging. And software to run geospatial analysis. And an understanding of genetics, biology, climatology, economics, global trading, and estate planning. So you can pass this so-called simple life on to your kids. At Pioneer, we're proud to work with generations of American farmers in the most complex and rewarding industry on earth. So from your friends at Pioneer, thank you, farmers.
We're joined today by Joan Ruskamp, past chairman of the Cattlemen's Beef Board, to talk about what your dollar does to promote demand for beef. Joan, what's new with the beef checkoff?
Thanks for having me on. According to our most recent producer survey, 80% of producers today say the checkoff drives demand for beef. So I'd like to share some of the ways we're doing that. One example is foreign marketing. We're exporting about $8 billion worth of beef overseas. That's huge, especially considering how we've opened up markets in Asia, creating value for producers around $320 per head slaughtered. Additionally, the checkoff has helped boost retail meat case sales to a six-year high, with strong demand expected to continue through 2019. We also launched a campaign to showcase real ways the checkoff is using producer dollars to drive demand. It's called Your Dollar Does. You can learn more and sign up for the newsletter at drivingdemandforbeef.com.
That's great, Joan. Thanks for joining us from the Cattlemen's Beef Board. To learn more, go to drivingdemandforbeef.com, funded by the Beef Checkoff.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Sweet strawberry icing.
You're in Goodwill and just past that vintage denim jacket, you spot miniature donut earrings. You lean in. Ah, that's the scent of shopping success. Because at Goodwill, every item you buy funds local job training and more. So bring home those donut earrings and bring home so much good to your community. Goodwill. Bring good.
See the latest tech and agriculture at the Farm Progress Show, the nation's largest outdoor farm show, August 27th, 28th, and 29th in Decatur, Illinois.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
Yow.
And we are going to take a bite right out of the middle of the Corn Belt today with the Farmer Forum. We're running north to south. Let's bring them on. Brad Nelson, Albert Lee, Minnesota. Brad's been on the Farmer Forum several times. How are you this morning, Brad?
I'm doing well, Chip. How about yourself?
Doing okay. I'm over in Laverne this morning.
No kidding. Well, you're not that far from me. You'll have to stop by on your way back.
Well, I was a lot closer late yesterday afternoon when I turned on to 90.
Yeah, you were a mile away then.
Yep, that's right. That's right. So Brad's going along on the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour again this year. Brad is a master scout, which means that he brings a lot to the tour for us every year. And Brad is one of those guys that the history goes way back with Brad. What year was it? I think it was in the 90s, Brad, when I was out there in the Eastern Belt running routes by myself because we didn't have people participating. And I was going to have to run a route by myself from I think it was Iowa City up to Owatonna. And Brad's wife drove him to Iowa City so that he could ride back to Owatonna with me.
I think that was 2003.
Was it? Was it 2003?
I think that was the aphid year. First aphid
That's
year.
Right. That's right. That's right. Yes. Yeah.
So I remember I sprayed my beans that year, and that was for aphids, and a lot of people didn't, and it was a well-paying proposition.
Oh, man. I tell you what, you'd get done in those bean fields that year, and you could take your jeans off at the end of the day and stand them up in the corner because of all the aphid goo.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, it was. It really was. And it really took a big bite out of yields out there. So how's things looking right now there in southeast Minnesota?
Well, things look pretty good. You know, I feel my prospects in soybeans probably are a little better in corn to beat my, you know, average. And the corn has, you know, got its issues with drowned out spots and yellow spots and about 3 weeks ago, we had quite the wind system that blew through here and a lot of green snap. And from what I've heard, it goes all the way to Pipestone, so yeah, it's quite a stretch through here. And
you can see it driving down 90, Brad. Just that pot marked cornfields out there and everything. It's really kind of ugly.
Yep, that it is. And you know what that transpires into the final yield at the end of the day, I'm not quite sure, but it's not going to help, that's for sure.
No, that's right. That's right. You know, more and more people saying that they're concerned about what that bean crop's going to be, just as much as what they are on corn. But the bean crop up this way looks short, Brad, but I don't know. We've been in short beans that yielded before. What's the pod set look like?
On my beans, I'm pretty happy with them. And there's a lot of variability in beans as well. I mean, when I'm speaking beans around here, I'm talking about when I think I can beat my average, that's me. I feel like the county probably is going to struggle with corn and beans to meet an average yield. You know, because there was a ton of beans planted in June here. And, I mean, they yield good, but they just don't yield, you know, top flight like we've gotten used to the last number of years. So,
right. Okay, very good. Let's move a little bit further to the south, Cedar Falls, Iowa. This is the guy that gives me the warning, I guess, that planters are out in the field, because I drive by his place a lot going back and forth to Cedar Falls. Brent Judish, how are you this morning, Brent? Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Chip. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Things look pretty good around Cedar Falls, don't they?
In general, they do, yes. Back to Brad's sentiment, you know, we get going pretty early with planting. You know, when I start, I always send you a text. Yep. And we start doing beans the same day as we start doing corn, so we kind of get after it. But around our area, the early crops are going to have a lot of potential, but there was a lot of corn and beans both planted in June, and they have a long way to go.
Yeah, what stage are those at right now, Brent? Talk corn specifically. I mean, are they past blister and starting to put some color on?
The early planted corn is, I think, talking to our agronomy, we're within about 5 or 6 days of normal on the April planted corn. So, yeah, okay. I've already been out sampling, getting ready for tour. We got corn easily sampled. The ear length is there. That looks good, but then you go down the road 2 miles, and there's fields that are still pollinating yet. They're still white silks, and that was all planted in June. So a lot of variability just within a few miles here.
Yeah, boy, I don't want to go into any fields that have got green silks on them on crop tour, but over in the Eastern Belt, these guys are going on the western leg of the tour with me, but over in the Eastern Belt, good grief, I think they're going to be seeing a lot of green silks and having to make some difficult decisions on, do we pull a sample out of this field or do we go to the next one? And it's not going to be easy this year. You guys, Brad and Brent, we're going to run into it when we get up into South Dakota too, aren't we?
Oh, no question about it. There's no doubt about it. And echoing Brent, I mean, there's a field mile and a half west of me that's just pollinating right now.
Yeah.
So, wow. I mean, we got that here too.
Yep. Okay. Let's go way south. And I know Sherman's been listening. And he's probably thinking, yep, what, these guys have got nothing to complain about based on the planting season that you had down there, right?
Oh, it's been a fun one to say the least. Not really. we were wet. I mean, the earliest I got planted was May 17th, and that was just to get started, basically. And then we had a lot of rain hit, and a lot of that first planting stuff had to be replanted, quite a bit, actually. And then,
yeah, now, Sherman, I didn't say where you were from. It's southeast Illinois, correct?
Yes, southeast Illinois, Crawford County, to be exact,
yep.
Right up against the Indiana border, south of Route 70.
Right.
South of Champaign, probably an hour and a half or so.
Gotcha.
But everything planted really late. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to get you restarted on that. Battling the rain, everything got planted late. Is it catching up at all? Does it feel like it is?
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, it, on my my particular area, our county, has actually been a little bit luckier than most of them to the west and actually to the north of us. We've had some of these rains come through. I mean, we just had an inch and eight tenths rain come through here the other day. So it is catching up, but we still need a lot of time for this late planted stuff to, finish out well. I mean, it has potential. But like I said, if you go very far west, a few counties, you go north of me, a few counties into some high producing areas. I just talked to a guy up there and he's like 160 bushel corn, and that stuff up there is usually 240.
Yeah.
So I think being off 50 bushel off your average in Illinois is not going to be a stretch.
And that matters.
Yeah.
It matters.
And you also, you know, you're talking about beans. I mean, same way with beans. I mean, very, very few beans got planted, in May around through here. Most of them were June, even all the way up to the end of July. And you know those beans, you know, regardless of the weather, they're just not going to yield like early May, late April beans.
Brent, do you feel like you can get back to your actual production history yield on corn?
Yes. And I'm on the USDA panel, so I got surveyed here, 2.5 weeks ago. I'm confident we're going to beat our 5-year average. We're not going to quite have last year's record corn crop because we do have a little bit of a compaction on the end rows and a few holes here and there, but I'm very confident in our corn crop will be good. My one caveat is the bean crop. I finished spraying them with fungicide 2.5 weeks ago. They were short. They didn't look that good. But, you know, we got an inch of rain 1.5 weeks ago. We had 0.5 inch this week. Beans, we may get back to our APH. I don't think we're going to get above that. But we have put some life into the beans the last 2 weeks with these rains we've had.
Gotcha. Sherman, what about you? You think you've got a chance at your APH yet?
No. Not really. I think we're going to be under it, especially in beans. I mean, corn, you know, if we could finish well, I mean, I'm talking like Brad was saying, I'm talking on my farm because we got, you know, blessed with quite a bit of rain. Corn has potential. It just depends on how we finish with it. But beans, I just can't see it. I mean, they're just too short. We don't have the nodes. We don't have the pod counts that we, you know, typically need for that upper 60, 70, even 80 bushel beans that here.
Right.
Now, anywhere
right.
around through here.
Right. And Brad, don't you worry. When we come back, I'm going to ask you what you think of that 169.5 and the 48.5. Okay, buddy? We'll get into
Sounds
it.
Good.
We'll get into it. We got to do it. All right. We are having a farmer forum on today's AgriTalk. Brad from Minnesota, Brent from Iowa, Sherman from Illinois.
Quantix is a powerfully simple drone that helps you scout all of your acreage from the sky. With a swipe of a button, its automated flight covers 400 acres in 45 minutes, delivering real-time, quick-look maps, which can be viewed immediately after landing. For deeper analysis, AVDSS Analytics transforms the data into actionable insights. It doesn't get any easier than Quantix and AVDSS. Visit farmdronedemo.com to learn more.
Farm Journal is bringing Hemp College to Altoona, Iowa on September 17th. This one-day farmer-focused conference will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts and gather answers to all your hemp questions. Our last Hemp College sold out, so don't miss your chance to attend. Register today at agweb.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, what's going on here? Let's start with the livestock because we've got, well, at least we had a nice recovery going on in the cattle. What's going on?
Yeah, the cattle market's kind of mixed right now. We are seeing some strong gains in deferred live cattle futures. Really strong gains in the feeder cattle market. So that's somewhat of a reversal here of what we've seen, the heavy sell-off. Nearby live cattle futures are still under some pressure. They tried to work higher early, but just buyer interest is limited there. I think that's continued fallout from the Tyson fire there in Holcomb, Kansas. And you know, the short-term supply concerns, looks like longer term, the market's kind of coming back to reality a little bit here.
Gotcha. Hogs are doing okay.
Yes, they are. Very strong gains in everything but the August, and that expires tomorrow. So, but really, the deferred contracts are performing very nicely this morning, which is a good sign here.
All right. Corn market's giving back some of the gains that it posted earlier.
Yeah, unfortunately. We did see strength through the overnight trade and early this morning, but just isn't lasting, and we're fractionally to about a penny lower in most of the contracts right now. So that's disappointing news, obviously, but probably not too much unexpected in the fact that we've taken all the bullishness out of the market at this point in time, so you're going to see sellers above the market, and that's what's happened so far this morning. The soybean market, it's about a nickel lower right now.
Yeah, it just kind of feels like these markets are waiting on something. I don't know exactly what that is, but they're waiting for something, Brian.
Yeah, it might be crop tour. Who knows?
Yeah, you never know. All right, we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Thanks, buddy. That's Pro Farmer Editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor and AgriTalk Market Analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarm.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
The IBM Watson Decision Platform for Agriculture, helping to feed a hungry world with the power of AI.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with me.
I am.
And
right
we've got a farmer forum going on. It's kind of a lively group today, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah, let's see how they are about, you know, a week and a day from right now, after 4 days of crop touring out in the western Corn Belt. We've got Sherman Newland from Illinois, Brent Judish from Iowa, and Brad Nelson from Minnesota. Okay, Brad, I'm going to go ahead and go right there with you. Let's start off with a couple of things here. First, can your corn, can your soybeans get to your APH? And then let's jump right into it. What do you think of the 169.5 and the 48.5?
Well, I guess I really question whether either one of those numbers can be met. You know, let's hit corn at 169.5. That's a top five national average yield. That is with the 30 to 35 million acres of corn planted in June. That just seems so unrealistic. I can't even get my head around it, around it. USDA has told us on crop tour that they assume normal weather going forward all the time. And because we've had these conversations many times.
Yes.
And to me, they didn't factor in normal weather. They factored in, to me, extraordinary weather. And they also factored in longer daylight length for soybeans than is even possible come 2 weeks from now, you know, for more bean pods to be put on and reproduction to flourish and continue, you know. So
yeah,
that alone is a big problem to me. And then the other one, you and I have talked about this over the last month or two, is a strong basis. You know, I'm questioning whether they were even accurate last year with the way the basis is across the Midwest, and people are talking about hoarding corn and that sort of thing as a reason. But if there's 2.3 million bushels of corn sitting out that's got to go market and another big crop coming out of the field, basis should not be a nickel under in Fremont County, and it should not be 50 to 65 over in the Eastern Corn Belt. So those are 2 points that really bug the heck out of me.
Good point.
You know, USDA took a double barrel shotgun to the acreage on yield reports to me on Monday, and you won't get it back. You know,
Sherman,
I don't feel like it'll come back in a big way.
Sherman, let me ask you this question, because first, let's get your take on 169.5 and 48.5 for a national average yields. What do you think?
I agree with everything Brad said. I mean,
okay.
knowing how late this crop is, I think it's going to be a pretty tough road to hoe to get up to those levels.
Now, Sherman, let me ask you this. What if it happens? And I'm not talking so much about the bean yield here. I'm talking about the corn yield. What if that 169.5 happens? I agree. I think this is a huge what if. But what if it happens? What is it telling us?
Well, it's telling us we have some pretty good hybrids out there anymore with this corn genetics going forward. That it's going to be really hard to herd a corn crop. I mean, if we can't herd it now. I mean, when are we going to herd it? I mean, unless we have a drought like we did in 2012, in my opinion. But it also means prices are going to go lower.
Yeah.
If that is a factual end up being that way. But I guess I really just don't see it being that way, knowing how dry it's been in Illinois and Indiana.
Right. See, we haven't even talked about that, Sherman. Or Brad and Brent, how dry it got over there in Illinois and Indiana and parts of Ohio at exactly the wrong time.
Yeah, you had everything planted in mud. You had, then it turned off dry and you had shallow roots. Like I said, luckily we were down here and we caught some rain, but I know in, central Illinois and north and central Indiana and north up around through Lafayette, they just have not had much rain. Even now, they still have missed these rains up in a lot of these areas. So, I think you're going to have light test weight corn. I think you're going to have shallow grain, shallow kernel corn when it's all said and done. And I think the farther north you go, something we haven't talked about is, cold weather and possibility of this stuff not finishing.
That's right. Okay, Brent, another thing that I don't think is factored into the 169.5 is this. When you're out there running the combine and you're watching the yield monitor and you're going through good corn, I mean, it's solid Blackhawk County corn. It's 230, it's 235, everything's looking good. And then you got to go through an acre that is drowned out. It really pulls that average yield down, doesn't it?
Oh, if you look at the average field, say you've got just 3% of your field has a loss or zero or something in it. 3% of 230, that's 10 bushel acre just by having one bad spot,
Yeah.
But you talk about the totals, I'm an analytical guy from Crop Tour, but I guess personally speaking, if Iowa and Nebraska are bright spots in the country, personally speaking, I don't think I have within 7 or 8 or 9 bushel of last year's crop on my farm, and I'm one of the better areas of the country. So if I'm going to be below that 8 or 9 bushel variation from last year, how can the country be that close?
Right. Yeah, and that's a good point to stress. I mean, you said that you can get your corn back to APH, but getting back to APH would be off how much from last year?
That'd be off 10% from last year, 20 bushel acre.
20 bushel. There you go.
Right.
There you go. Yeah.
And so if I'm optimistic and I cut that variation in half, that puts me right on top of the deviation from last year's crop to this year's crop. And we're in that good to excellent rating compared to a lot of these states.
Yep. Okay. So let's imagine now, here's another big what if. Brad, let's say that we get all the way down in the January annual production summary, the corn yield comes in at 159.5, 10 bushels below where we are in right now. What does that do to the credibility of USDA?
Well, to me it hurts it because you just took USDA just took away marketing opportunities galore from the Midwest, as guys get into their crop and they see what they have, you know, some guys haven't sold a lot because they're worried about what they're going to get. So they haven't sold a lot. And, you know, to me, they took away a marketing opportunity with a premature number that is fictitious as far as I'm concerned. And I like to point to, with the conversation we just had of 2009, I believe it was, when, you know, we had a pretty high stout USDA yield. And as the year went along, I mean, the test weights proved out a lot lower, and the crop didn't end up being there when it was all said and done. But nothing changed, you know. And by then, the opportunities are all gone because they were wrong.
Yep. Yep. Okay, so tell me this. And I'll go back to Sherman on this. Did they make the mistake with the 169.5, or do you think that they made the mistake at the world board when they took 10 bushels off the trend line yield from 176 and took it down to 166 based on their models? I tell you what, if we would have gone from 176 to a 169 in the first production estimate, that might have made a hell of a difference.
Yes, I think you're right. I guess I don't know if they made a mistake. I mean, I think the 166 is probably more realistic, but maybe too soon, because then it amped up everybody's expectations with the planting progress and everything that we weren't making, I guess, it drove the market a lot higher. So then that in turn did drive planters probably a lot later than they needed to be going, you know, which then reflected on the more acres, possibly, which I'm still not in agreement on that yet, you know, either.
Yeah.
But, you know, you said something about, you know, will they look bad if they lower the yield to 159? I don't know. I'd rather them do that than, you know, think they have to save face, because this way, I mean, in the September report, they're actually going to go out and sample. You know,
yep.
This past one was just farmer surveyed and satellites, more or less. So, you know, depending on who they surveyed and where all that came from, I think, you know, for the most part, most would agree that the yield should be lower than 169 at this point.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, guys. Well, I've got an announcement for you. So get your questions ready for the guy responsible, because Lance Honig, the chief of the crops branch at NASS, is going to meet with us in Nebraska City on Tuesday night next week. What do you think of that?
No, I like that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's the cool thing. Here's the cool thing. Lance, we talked to him. We said, hey, can you come out and do this? He's going to be in Nebraska City on Tuesday night. He's going to be in Iowa City on Wednesday night. And then he's coming up to Rochester for Thursday night.
Oh, man. So, he's a glutton for punishment.
I tell you what, though, he was on the show the other day, and he wants to be as transparent as he possibly can with all the questions about how this crop is coming on, and him coming out on Crop Tour with us for three nights, I think is really pretty cool. So we're looking forward to having him out there on the road with us. Guys, I can't wait to see you on Sunday night. I got the first round, all right? All right, Brad Nelson, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you on Sunday. Brent Judish, we'll see you soon. And Sherman, see you Sunday up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. All right, when we come back, Jay Merriman, longtime crop scout on the Crop Tour and financial advisor, up next.
3, 2, 1. Oh, no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year, so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ad Council, and Make Safe Happen.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Farm Journal is bringing Hemp College to Altoona, Iowa on September 17th. This one-day farmer-focused conference will get you on the right production path with information on the best agronomic practices for hemp production, marketing, legal considerations, and policy news. Interact with growers and industry experts to gather answers to all your hemp questions. Our last Hemp College sold out, so don't miss your chance to attend. Register today at agweb.com/events/hempcollege.
What do you call someone who studies the weather? A climatologist? Someone who evaluates investments? A financial analyst? A person who studies DNA? A geneticist? Who researches markets? An economist? Who handles employees? An HR manager? And someone who does all these things? A farmer. At Pioneer, we're proud to work with generations of American farmers in the most complex and rewarding industry on Earth. So from your friends at Pioneer, thank you, farmers.
Quantix is a powerfully simple drone that helps you scout all of your acreage from the sky. With a swipe of a button, its automated flight covers 400 acres in 45 minutes, delivering real-time, quick-look maps, which can be viewed immediately after landing. For deeper analysis, AVDSS Analytics transforms the data into actionable insights. It doesn't get any easier than Quantix and AVDSS. Visit farmdronedemo.com to learn more.
They call it the World's Fair of Agriculture, and for good reason. It's all there for the folks who farm, the Farm Progress Show. Make your plans to be in Decatur, Illinois for the 66th Annual Farm Progress Show, August 27th through the 29th. Get more information at farmprogressshow.com. See the latest in farming up close, talk to exhibitors and factory techs, and watch the equipment work in the field. We'll look for you at the Farm Progress Show, August 27th through the 29th at Decatur, Illinois.
We're joined today by Joan Ruskamp, past chairman of the Cattlemen's Beef Board, to talk about what your dollar does to promote demand for beef. Joan, what's new with the beef checkoff?
Thanks for having me on. According to our most recent producer survey, 80% of producers today say the checkoff drives demand for beef. So I'd like to share some of the ways we're doing that. One example is foreign marketing. We're exporting about $8 billion worth of beef overseas. That's huge, especially considering how we've opened up markets in Asia, creating value for producers around $320 per head slaughtered. Additionally, the checkoff has helped boost retail meat case sales to a six-year high, with strong demand expected to continue through 2019. We also launched a campaign to showcase real ways the checkoff is using producer dollars to drive demand. It's called Your Dollar Does. You can learn more and sign up for the newsletter at drivingdemandforbeef.com.
That's great, Joan. Thanks for joining us from the Cattlemen's Beef Board. To learn more, go to drivingdemandforbeef.com, funded by the Beef Checkoff.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our D.C. Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the D.C. politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the D.C. Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2019 Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour is coming soon. Kicking off August 19th, watch for extensive coverage on air and online. The premier sponsor of Crop Tour is Pioneer, with support from IBM, RCIS, RAM, AeroVironment, Titan Tires, Farm Mobile, and Farm Credit Services of America.
Hey, welcome back. Glad that you could join us again today. Great Farmer Forum, Davis. Do you see why I'm excited about Crop Tour?
I'm super psyched as well. Yeah.
You know, I get to spend time with guys like that during the week. Mm-hmm. Hey, come on.
Good folks. Good folks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really cool. And I get to spend a couple of days with this guy, Jay Merriman, longtime crop scout on the Crop Tour and financial advisor. And Jay, buddy, I know that I brought you on to talk about Crop Tour and what you're expecting. But during the break, I'm looking around at some of the markets and what's going on. What the heck is going on with equities right now? Dow's off more than 600 points.
Tough day, Chip. Tough day. No question about it. Corn's making new lows. It's just not a very attractive screen to look up at right now.
Yeah, no question about it. No doubt. Hey, you know, every time that people ask me about, okay, what do you expect to see out there on Crop Tour? And you know, your standard answer is, well, you know, every year's different. I think it's important for people to understand that while every year's crop might be different, the Crop Tour is always the same, isn't it?
Yeah. Consistency is what we always try to strive for as far as the number of stops and, you know, how far we go into the fields and what we see out there. The thing that's just going to be terribly tough this year is quite obviously crop maturity, both soybeans and corn. And I'm puzzled. You know, we turned the clock back in the late 90s there when we used to do the crop tour across the whole Midwest and started in Ohio, and we never saw an ear out there that had blister stage on it yet, you know, at August 20th or whatever the date would have been back at that time. One of our scouts was an Ohio farmer, and he says, we're basically thinking it's going to be zero unless we don't have a frost till well into November. And if I remember right, it was just right up against Thanksgiving when they got a frost, and they got 125 bushel the acre. But how can you account for that? You know, it's at some point in time, somebody's going to yell fire out here or frost, whichever word you want to use, and we're going to see the markets firm up some. They have to because we've got a tremendous amount of crop out here at risk, Chip.
Yeah, we do. That was Leland Beery, and it was 1996.
Mm-hmm. Came out of the fields with pollen all over us.
Yep. And we came out of bean fields where there were two or three pods and two or three blooms on those plants. Mm-hmm. And the nodes were 4, 5, 6 inches apart on little spindly plants. And they still made 35 bushel because the growing season extended.
Yeah. And the same thing can happen this year. But as we all know, if you take the average date, we've got to have well past the average date for maturity on a lot of the crop out here, Chip.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And
we're
so
not
when
talking,
you...
We're not talking horror story thinking that it's going to frost early. Just a normal date will not get us there.
Right. Brad Nelson just made the point that if USDA was really assuming normal conditions through the end of the growing season in their estimate, there's no way they could have come with that 169.5 because there is so much of the corn that's vulnerable to damage from a normal first frost date. Or frost on the normal first frost date.
Sure. And we've questioned a lot of things right along. The thing that boggled my mind, I know we were wanting to talk about Crop Tour, but the thing that really gets me is, you know, from the March acreage report when it came out, in essence, we've seen a major expansion as far as the potential corn acres that were supposedly going to be planted out here. Yep. And boy, we just didn't catch the yellow flag or red flag from the major seed corn companies that, boys, it's just going out the back door willy-nilly. I mean, there's new orders coming in every day. And, you know, either the March report was a just complete joke or we're really, really struggling to put our arms around this deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to struggle all year long. I mean, and when it comes to acreage, I've been on here talking about, you know, just ignore planted acres as much as you can because it's going to come down to harvested acres. That's what's really going to tell us the story here.
Absolutely. And the one thing that we do know, when we had our June-July rally, you know, yeah, the board rallied a buck, but the cash market rallied a buck and a half plus. And you like to see markets like that. You like to see markets that are led by the cash. You know, we've not had a bean market that's been led by the cash any this year. I mean, that's a mode of a different deal there. But, you know, that's what's surprising, how tight supplies got as far as cash out here. And yet the market was able to fall apart the way it has here in the last 2 weeks.
Okay, so what do you do with this market right now? Do you just kind of sit back and wait and see what kind of a recovery we get?
Yep. Okay. You got to find a bottom first. I would say you got to quit going down before you can go up, and that's exactly where we're at. The thing that we're looking at as much as anything, Chip, is out in the option market. You know, at some point in time, we'll be laying in some relatively cheap options, probably in the $4 level on the December call, simply from the standpoint it's our frost insurance as we go forward.
Yep.
My biggest concern, Chip, is if we would have an early frost, the quality of the crop that we have out there. You know, we've gone through this before where we, you know, had 40% moisture corn with 40-pound test weight. And I'll just be perfectly honest with you. I don't know where crop insurance comes in at that point in time when you've got a real quality issue. That's why, you know, we'll start putting some call options on to protect ourselves on it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Good stuff, Jay. I will see you Tuesday night, Nebraska City, right?
No, I'm coming Sunday night, Jeff.
What?
Believe it or not, I will be there Sunday night. I'm doing the whole tour this year for the first time in a long time. So, nope.
Oh, my gosh.
Night. Yeah. Oh. Be ready. Be ready. Coming to Nebraska City.
Yep.
You said Lance was coming to Nebraska City. I got room in my pickup if he wants to ride with me that day.
We'll have to. I'll find out if he would like to do that. All right, Jay. Awesome. We'll see you Sunday at Sioux Falls. Spectacular.
Right. Good to talk to you, Jeff.
Good to see you. Yep. All right. Wow. That is so cool. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks to Margie Eckelkamp, Brad Nelson, Brent Judas, Sherman Newland for joining us today. Come back this afternoon. I'm going to be on the road, but Davis and Bubba got you covered.
Land, family, good weather. All a farmer needs for the simple life. Just a field, a family, sunshine, and rain. And a drone for digital imaging. And software to run geospatial analysis. And a commercial driver's license for heavy equipment. And a spreadsheet program to help maximize your return on investment. And an understanding of genetics, biology, economics, climatology, banking, global market prices, land lease negotiation, engineering, and HR management. Oh, and estate planning, so you can pass this so-called simple life onto your kids. At Pioneer, we're proud to work with generations of American farmers in the most complex and rewarding industry on earth. So from your friends at Pioneer, thank you, farmers.